Did you have much more interaction with Peterson then?
No, I never really, Charlie and I knew each other, but not really closely, and of course I greatly admired what he did, and the only thing I ever did was in this was a few, and the only thing we ever wrote up I think was this permanganate experiments, but Donnie Sam, who was a new employee at the time, was very interested I discussed this with him, and he was very interested in giving this sort of thing a try. And in all of this stuff, we kept in close touch. I wouldn't do anything with Charlie unless I let him know. And so he was just the opposite. He wanted as many people as he could find to work on this, which was, that's how I usually felt about it. I never wanted people not to work on it. I'd rather have people working on what you're doing than not working on it. So Charlie retired not too far from that, and he went off to do some crystallography in England after he retired, to look at these, do some crystal structures in these on a visiting professorship type of thing. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, Jack Roberts was the one that brought us together. I didn't know what he was doing there. This can happen in DuPont if you're not publishing.
And you don't have interactions with the other groups then as such?
Oh, we do, but there are just so many. You know, Charlie was in a polymer department, and probably any connection that our people would have had with Charlie might have been with some polymer work. But at the time, that department was being very generous to him. They urged him to go, you know, they recognized that he had some good stuff and it was being pushed. Or he was given the time and wherewithal to bring this stuff to a conclusion.
There was a paper on acetylene dicarbonyl fluoride. In which there was a note which said, caution, it is toxic and corrosive. And no, that wasn't the one. There was another one where you had a note something about it caused skin lesions and so on. I said, that sounds like it came out of personal experience.
Yeah, I had that was back with the thiocyanocarbons.
Okay, that's right.
That was this first isothiocyanate. And as I say, the compound that the first C13 structure was ever done on. And this stuff, as a matter of fact, the Army, that may have gotten used. The Army was looking at this intently as an incapacitating agent. It caused the most, do you have poison ivy? Do you ever get it? I mean, right? Well, if you've had a bad dose of it, you know what it's like. This was like this, but worse. And it was like poison oak or sumac or something. It was really awful. And dilute solutions of it got everybody. You didn't have to be much sensitive. And almost anybody that worked around this and got it on them got this very bad reaction. The Army, for a long time, showed a lot of interest in this. And it might even be being used for all I know somewhere. But it was bad, and I was sensitized to the point where for years, if I opened one of my old notebooks, this whole triangle here just lighted up red. I just opened up a lab book. I mean, so that, you know, you're really talking about pico
yes.
grams or something.
Yes.
All right.
It's incredible.
Yep. It took over a decade to be. I felt reasonably safe around it again.
Is acetylene dicarbonyl fluoride, did that have any?
No, it was.
Again, you're quite frequently dealing with areas which are toxic or corrosive materials.
Well, what we were hoping to do was to use this as a, for instance, with acetylene dicarboxylic acid, you might make a uh, You might make the bisanhydride, which is now a new oxide of carbon, by definition. And we were looking at it for that and as a polymer intermediate and what have you. We were able to make it, but nothing extraordinary came of it. So,
there was a paper in Helvetica Chemica Octa, and I'm not sure what it looked like. That was a paper on the, what is it, on the bishomoquinone.
Oh yeah.
With Dryding and others.
Right. Dryding. What the hell was that now?
I was wondering how you made that connection with the.
Well, I visited Ate Ha and got to know those people very well, and there was something we collaborated on, but I don't think I don't think we played a very large role in that. I think this was largely Dryding Andre's. The people I knew there best were Eschenmoser. He and his wife Elizabeth. Both of us have our wives are named Elizabeth, and we saw a lot of each other over the years, and then he turned out to be a great collaborator of Woodward's and close to Bob. And Jack Bennett's was the other one, the crystallographer there, the Scotsman. And Duilio Aragoni. Mm-hmm. When I bought the house that we're living in now, the man I bought it from was a Swiss living in this country who had Aragoni's children here, living with him, going to school. He was a Italian-Swiss industrialist guy that we bought our old place from. So you know, the world is very small.
I don't have the full title here, but there was a tetraase tridecane, I think, but what I struck by is this one's where all the protons became equivalent to water. There was a whole series of
equilibrium. This was with Jack Richmond.
Right.
Yeah. That paper won the Best Paper of the Year award with the Delaware ACS, mm-hmm. The only time they never gave it to me with the Simmons-Smith reaction or anything. they gave it to Jack Richmond and me for that. Yeah, this is this tetramine. And you can see it. I mean, polycyclic amines were on my mind at any time. That's a very interesting compound, and that has fostered a fair amount of work. But again, I don't think anything world shattering has happened with others. But it was nice, very pretty piece of work. But it tends to be what a lot of the things that I've done there's more beauty in them than there is value or utility. That was one that had a lot of. I thought it was very pretty, but.
But if you had been in an academic chemist, that wouldn't have made any.
No, right. Right.
That would have taken that onus away.
Right.
Also, in this time, you started at Delaware as an adjunct. And I guess do you still continue as an adjunct?
I'm still on there at their request, but I don't do much for them anymore. I used to teach a course down there, special topics courses, and to organic graduate students, usually an evening course.
I see.
I trained a PhD with one of their faculty down there, and the guy would spend a year here in our lab, which was tremendous because he had a guy like Fukunaga as a lab mate, where boy, there's not many grad students can do that. And then he'd go back to Delaware for a year and come back to us. And one of the departments at DuPont hired him, and he did extremely well at DuPont, and just in the last year or so transferred into this department here, a guy named Tom Ford. So I produced one PhD down there.
And I was curious as to if you had been able to do that.
Yeah.
Well, 1974 you became research director, and I guess we've already talked about that. Although you had a paper, you had some more theoretical papers. You have this with Benet or Little Cemetery Papers. Then you had a paper with George Hammond and Jack Leonard.
Yeah. This was a bit on the structure of cyclohexane itself. This was some conformational analysis, something that we both did independently, and then we just happened to find that we had done it, same thing independently, so we just put it together. It wasn't any, it turned out not to be anything of a great moment, but George liked it. By the way, the person I got the most, probably the most encouragement early on in that cyclopropanation was Saul Weinstein. He was just looking at homoaromaticity, and this reaction gave him the opportunity to synthesize just incredible amounts of things to test out a lot of his theories. So I spent a lot of time on the phone. Every time something didn't work, he was calling up, and this was a great thrill because I was a pretty young guy that had the, to me, I thought Weinstein was another one of these next to God, and he was deeply impressed by the reaction, but more impressed than anything was as a tool to do all kinds of things he wanted to do. So he used, he and his students made very heavy use and popularized this, which played a big role in helping to get the word around. And that was a, I remember the day, it was a tremendous tragedy when he died. That was another guy I liked very, very much.
You spent 78 in Chicago also.
Correct. I was the first industrial garage professor they had there.
Did they ask you, or did you?
Yeah.
Were you looking for something?
No, no. This is a garage professorship is an award. That's a visiting, a 1 year visiting professorship, which is most people, you know, come and stay a month or two and give some special lectures, which is what I did. But you're free to, they'll pay for you for the year. And I think there had been about 15 or 16 or so, whatever it is, some number like that, of garage professors. But that's in their terms, a high honor to get the garage award. And his wife, after Garage died, his wife established this visiting professorship. And it's more in the nature of an award than it is. They look at it more as an award than they do as a visiting. It is a visiting professorship, but they think of it more as an award. And as I was saying, that I was I think the first industrial person that they'd given it to.
Then the work for your work with Merrifield starts, at least in the publication.
Yeah.
And then in 70, was it 79 when CRD, they broke up the development department and part came to CRD?
No, that already happened.
Okay.
Right.
That was 74 when that happened.
That's right. And by that time, we had taken over Haskell Laboratory of Toxicology and Industrial Medicine. And development department merged with CRD. And the head of development was Monroe Sadler, who was here in CRD when I first came. Then he moved out and up to run, become the head of development department. And he and Cairns never got along. They were at, you know, they were just they never saw anything eye to eye. I like both of these people very much. They're very different kinds of characters, and but those guys never were friends. And as I said, when Ted got ready to retire, his assistant then, when they merged the departments, they made Ted the head of the combined department and Monroe the assistant. And then when Ted got ready to retire, they came to me and said they wanted to, and that's what they did. And so Monroe worked for me for a year. Uneasily, he was unhappy. He knew I didn't do this, you know, didn't do this to him. But it wasn't comfortable, the arrangement, and he left at an early time. A tremendous loss, in my opinion, to DuPont.
Council and Smith have a following quotation. By supporting Simmons, Jefferson calmed the nerves of DuPont scientists who feared that research was no longer viewed as the mainspring of the company. To quote out of Council and Smith.
Well, as I said, everybody knows where I'm coming from the science end of it, and I think most of the department feels comfortable if there's somebody like me or others like me that have an outlook like that, or Cairns or others that have been here. By the late 80s, things were, you know, starting to get rocky, and I don't know when David, when that quote, I don't know when he was applying that. Was he wasn't applying that?
That was in 79 when you became.
Okay, well then 79 was the end of, yes, that was just, yeah, 79 was the end of Shapiro's reign, the beginning of Jefferson. And, no, it wasn't the beginning of Jefferson. That Jefferson wasn't until 81 or something like that. That was still in Shapiro's reign. And, as I said, that was a down period for research people. We're concerned of what was going to happen. Some of Shapiro's talks had included statements that didn't endear research people to him.
When you were put into that position, did you have any specific agenda you wanted to follow?
Yeah, I wanted to do what we were doing, what we were still doing. And but see, then Jefferson got in the saddle a couple of years later, and as soon as he got in the saddle, then research became king again. So it was that first couple of years when Jefferson was a executive committee member, I was reporting to him, and this was the end of the Shapiro reign. But things were getting a little better. They were certainly much better in 80 and 81 than they were in 74, 75, with the oil crisis and all, and the uncertainty there.
How many?
So, you know, Jim, in many ways, I had it easy because the tough decisions are the ones that are having to be made now. And much of my reign was coincided with Jefferson and Heckert, who were great research supporters. That first couple of years of Shapiro wasn't a problem. He just wasn't a research guy, and he didn't, his eyes didn't light up when he, like a Jefferson's would, and that's the thing that inspires the troops, you know, the boss really understands what the hell is they're telling you. But those weren't really bad, they weren't bad years in the sense that Shapiro was going to do anything. The morale was low because people were just still not sure where in the hell they were going, and hence the quote of his.
How many different, as director of research, how many different groups did you have reporting to you?
Well, I had...
You still organized
as director of research? As director of research, we had... organic, inorganic, chemistry, organometallic really, catalysis, big biology group, physics, and under Jefferson, central research here just about doubled in size, and we built this big new building up at the end to house the molecular biology and biochemistry.
He was the one who was instrumental in moving in that direction, wasn't he?
Jeff and I went, I remember the two of us went up to Harvard and had dinner with the dean of the Harvard Medical School and with Howard Johnson, who was the, not the chairman of the board, but he's the outside chairman of the corporation board, to talk about the future. This was around 81, and to talk about the future of biology and molecular biology, and out of that grew a friendship with Dan Tostison, who was the dean of the medical school, and we ultimately supported Phil Lieber up there, to the tune of about $1.5 million a year for several years, and to establish a school of human genetics, or department of human genetics. So Jeff, a lot of us had been prodding him in the sense, but he was the one that took the bull by the horns and did something about it, and of course was in a position to do something about it.
And what was your mode of operation with your with the different groups that were reporting to you? Did you meet with them weekly? Did you give them lots of freedom?
As department head?
Director of research.
Yeah, we had a weekly meeting of the science directors. And we had 2 days a week, sometimes 1 day a week, a research review downstairs where that was open to everybody. And they rotated through the various science directors, and some of their supervisors were responsible for the, might be a review on polymer chemistry or exploratory organic chemistry or plant science or whatever it might be. Following that more formal review, I would meet upstairs here in the conference room with the science director and any of the people that talked that day, and the other members of the group that didn't talk, and then we'd have an informal session for the rest of the morning where they would talk about things that they didn't have time to talk about in the formal thing, or maybe it wasn't as complete and they wanted to tell you about it separately. So I'd keep up with the people this way, and then once a week we had staff meetings of the science directors, and I would meet, and this was a combination of science and personnel items and finance items or whatever, you know, combination of everything. But not to exclude scientific items, too.
And it was up through, you became vice president in 83. When did you?
Nothing really changed. I was vice president in 79. It's just that with the type, Central Research had a responsibility in dollars and people far exceeding departments that had vice presidents. And we had always been called since the 19th century the director. So to regularize things, they made the head of engineering and the head of central research vice presidents. Nothing changed at all. I didn't, except for one thing, we became corporate officers at that time, because you can't use the title vice president such and such at a certain level unless you are a corporate officer. So in 83, the only thing that really changed was to literally become a corporate officer, but not salaries or anything like that. They were all the same. So they abolished the old concept of the director.
Okay.
And I think they regularized a couple of other staff departments, too, at the time, if I remember correctly. I don't remember that well. But there was more in name than anything else.
And during that 80s period, then, up until 1990, what were the What would you say were the major accomplishments of CRD?
Well, I think the major thing in the 80s was the life sciences. We had an outside board that consisted of Dan Tostison, Bob Weinberg from the Whitehead Institute at MIT, the neurobiologist Bloom. I can't remember. We had maybe 10 academics, and these were all top people in all sorts of areas that we were interested in. And we worked with them. We met with them like 3 times a year, and it was almost impossible to get that kind of those kind of people's time, get that much of their time, but they all came to every one of these meetings. They were well paid, but nevertheless, they spent a lot of time on this with us. And they had 2 jobs. One was to look at and comment on and provide advice on DuPont's pharmaceuticals division or department, and 2 central researchers, build up of background people in molecular biology, build up a modern program in molecular biology and modern techniques. And at the end of several years of all of this, at their last meetings, they provided a final written report saying that the quality of people that we had pulled together in this over the years, like Mark Pearson and so many of them, that they would take onto their own faculties anytime, and that it was the outstanding molecular biology organization and industry in the world as far as they were concerned. So these were guys like Weinberg and all that were doing this. So I think we felt that we did a good job on this, but Al McLaughlin, who was my assistant through a good deal of this and is now the senior VP, after they restructured again entirely, senior VP, he has like my job plus the residue of engineering, but not much different than what I was doing, except having that residue of engineering put in it. But Al and I spent an inordinate amount of time on life science related things. One, because we were building big new buildings and we're hiring so many people, we had to put this much time in it. I think